I am excited about our family series. We've been in this series all month long. It's going to wrap up next week, actually. But I want to bring another installment, another message in this family series. And it's a beautiful day because our entire church family is worshiping together. And I know moms and dads are wrestling with kids, and some moms and dads aren't quite brave enough to bring their kids. They're very thankful for church kids and all of that. And I understand, even though it's all right, come on in the house. It's okay if your kids make a little noise. It's all right if they're not perfect little angels. The entire service, it's just good to be together. It's good to be with my family today. It's good to be with my family of choice today. Good to be with all of you. I'm going to jump right into the message today because I feel it so strongly. It really has been a strong anointing on our family series. I need to lay some context today so that you'll understand exactly where I'm going and where the Lord is going to take us in this message today. But I often think about the oddity of the times that we are living in. I'll be 49 years old in just a few weeks, if you want to start saving up for my birthday. I'll be 49, and so I often, you know, in my mind, I feel like I'm still 20 years old. I still think there's, you know, plenty of time to, you know, worry about retirement, all of those kinds of things. But truth of the matter is, I'm right here suspended in that odd no man's land called middle age. I've got older people to one side, seasoned people to one side, young people on another side. I want to somehow be a bridge. I want to somehow help both. I want to somehow be a part of both. And the oddity of our times is that it is hard to pinpoint what people are committed to these days. It seems like morals are a moving target, almost subject to present company. You know, if I'm with my church friends, then my morals are these. If I'm with my work friends, then I may be a little more loose and lax, and so that standard or that bar may set just a little lower. It almost seems that the generations are at odds with one another. The older ones, and I say that respectfully, I don't mean that as any kind of slight, but the older ones, they do not understand anything about the young. And I realize both are in this service today. Old and young are in the house today and online. The old do not understand anything about the young. The work ethic of the young generation frustrates them. It probably frustrates all of us. If you go to anything that is customer service related in 2021, you leave shaking your head wondering how, if Jesus does not come back, how is all of this going to work out? And so the older generation is frustrated, and then the young see the old ways as too cumbersome, too outdated, far too restrictive, and much too narrow. Each of them talk past the other. And honestly, we will not know the impact. We will not know the impact until the last generation of hard workers has passed. I say that respectfully today. It's the oddity of our times. The truth is, the hardest working, the hardest serving people in our church are people who are in their 70s. It's a beautiful thing. It really was shocking to me when we came here 3.5 years ago, how many of our seniors, how many of the older generation served and worked hard. And I think while it is as beautiful as it is, I think that so many younger ones have become a little spoiled. You know, when your mama and your daddy do things for you, you don't feel like you have to do them for yourself. And I'm not on to anybody today. We're just talking about the oddity of our times, the challenges that we are living in. But I think about things, you know, questions that come up in my mind. Who will do the work when that generation can no longer do the work? Who will make it happen when that generation is no longer here to see that it is done? It has become difficult to motivate the young. I say that as a parent with a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old. I'm right in the middle of this with other parents and everyone that's feeling. How do I motivate them? How do I light a fire under them? And I'm willing to admit today that I do not always know what motivates them. And then when I figure out what it is that motivates them, I don't have the right language, because their language moves so fast. As soon as I learn when it's appropriate to say lit, they tell me it's already gone. It's hard to know how to motivate a generation. What I do know is that this has to change. And that me as pastor, I am committed to learning and understanding better, because I feel an urgency for our next generation. I've had other older people say, you know, my time is gone. I did all that for years. I served that. I'm the one that made the noise during worship. When I retired from my job, I retired from spiritual things. Man, let me challenge you not to retire from spiritual things, but to refire. Because the young generation needs you. I'm so thankful that our church family is multi-generational. So thankful that we are a church with people who are in their 90s and people who are in their nines. People, you know, a wide, and it's not the old against the young. It's all of us mixing in together. If the youths of America would just be patient to listen to the stories of the older people. When Kristen and I started the church in Texas, it was all young people. It was everybody on the stage was literally teenagers, a few 20-year-olds. Everybody was young, and my grandmother started coming to the church. She had never gone to church a day in her life other than a wedding or a funeral. I had the privilege of baptizing her. I had the privilege of leading her to Jesus. I'm thankful for it. She lived in a retirement community, an apartment complex for seniors. She started bringing her buddies to church. We were way too loud for them. They didn't like any of our songs. My grandmother complained every single week. Every single week. Lots of people didn't have my phone number. She had my phone number. She complained every single week about how loud it was, but she kept bringing her friends every single week. And those sweet little ladies would get saved and would get blessed. One of our favorites was Miss Marvel. Miss Marvel was 86 years old when she passed away, but our church loved Miss Marvel. She was just a hero in our house, and I would love it, because Miss Marvel would have a doctor's appointment and Kristen and I, you know, may catch up with her, talk to her, check on her, and do you need any help? Can we take you to the doctor's appointment? She'd, oh no, so and so. The young people were fighting over who was going to help her get around and who was going to take care of her. That is my vision. That is my heart for the generations to mix and mingle. And they realized real quick if they took Miss Marvel to lunch, they were going to hear fascinating stories and just a life that had been so well lived. And when she finally passed, her funeral packed out our church and everyone came to honor her life. Everyone was blessed. I'm committed to trying to help two generations understand one another better. But what's fascinating to me is when I read about the Industrial Revolution, you learned about this in school and maybe you've read about it since, but it's a fascinating period of history, about 1760 to 1840, give or take a few years. There is some disagreement about when it started and maybe when it ended or if it ever ended. But it was a span of about 80 years that literally changed the world. In fact, we still see and we still feel the results of that revolution today, even though it was so long ago. Why is that? Economic historians, those are financial people, financial historians believe that the onset of the Industrial Revolution is the most important event in human history. Of course, you and I would argue with that, but they're talking about in financial terms. It is the single most important event in financial terms in human history. What is notable? The notable changes were in textiles, in steam power, in iron making, in the invention of machine tools. You see, when the Industrial Revolution began, there was no light bulb. There was no telephone. There was no texting anyone your grocery list. None of those things existed. They had not been invented yet. Arguably, it's only because of the Industrial Revolution that any of those things were even able to be invented, and that's the only reason that they came about. So the Industrial Revolution, I'm going somewhere, give me just a moment, but it began in Europe, and really, at its most basic explanation, it began because people were coming up with cool inventions, crafty ideas, conveniences, helpful comforts. I mean, who knew? Who knew we could get this cotton from the field and stuff it into a sack and put that on our bed and it would be so comfortable to support our head and neck while we sleep at night? Who knew that we could use these different materials to make our clothes and to do so many things that are needed around the house? Yes, these inventions and these processes, they made life easier. They just brought things together. Hand tools soon became machines that made life easier. And what was cool about the Europeans is that they wanted to share it. They wanted everyone to experience these comforts, these conveniences, these hand tools that now are machines. They wanted everyone to experience it because they knew that it would make the world a better place. The world needs this, but we have no way to get it to them. So they start building steam power, putting steam power onto vessels and ships. But now that we have ships, we need dockyards. And hey, if we're going to bring our inventions to you, you over there have to have a dockyard too, because we've got to bring these inventions on a vessel. We've got to have a place to park this vessel. So they built dockyards and then vessels that could cross oceans. And now everyone across the world is experiencing what they discovered. The then known world, ultimately our world, was changed by dreamers. People who had vision. People who were willing to take on the responsibility. And see, that's where my concern comes in. That is where I am challenged as a leader in 2021, because I wonder who is going to take on the responsibility. Maybe it is the responsibility of spirituality in your family. Or maybe it's the responsibility of making sure that your family gets to church. Maybe it's the responsibility of ensuring that our schedules aren't so packed with other things that there is no time left to serve others and what is really important in our lives. Because hear me loud and clear today, the enemy has a plan for your life. I'm not a fan of young people being pressured to decide at 10 years old what they're going to do for the rest of their lives. Educators in the room, you may argue with me. We can talk about it after the service. It's a fascinating discussion, but I'm just not a fan of young people being pressured to make decisions. But hear me, while you may not have a plan for your life, I want to assure you that the enemy absolutely has a plan for your life. And the reality is he's starting younger and younger and younger. Lord, I feel my help in here today. Do I have just a few moments to work the word today? Because the enemy, his plan is that you would become a blamer and not a responsibility taker. His plan is to mire you in thoughts and ideas that you are a victim instead of a victor. That's the enemy's plan for your life. His plan is to convince you that your ways are better than God's ways. Woo, if I had time to preach today. That's his plan. You have to know the plan of the enemy. And why that is so important is because this generation has access over ownership. In fact, they prefer access over ownership. Literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, our youth, our young, have access to anything they want. Anything. All at the push of a button. You can order it, you can join it, you can access it, but you don't have to go away with any of the responsibility for the click or for the push of the button. Today it's Ubering over owning a vehicle. It's renting over owning. I've been to a few of the community meetings because they've sold property, what would become our closest neighbor. They've sold property, I guess, beside us. I'm still trying to figure out exactly the plot line, and mainly back here behind us, a number of acres to build something they're calling cottages, town cottages. I think these names just keep getting they just keep sounding, you know, better and better. But the vision, the model behind this is that these town cottages, they're $200,000 or $250,000, but they're targeted toward people who would rather rent, who would rather lease than own. It's fascinating that there's an entire there's an entire segment of our population. And before you think they're all young, listen, their average age is all people that are above 50 that do not want the responsibility of mowing a yard or putting up a fence or doing any of those things. They just want to retire and not have any of those responsibilities. And then there are the young who see no value in ownership. They want to use it and leave it. They want to experience it for a little while. They want to have access to it, but they have no interest in owning it. And it is a problem. It is a crisis. Sure, we may experience access, but I'm wondering if we will ever experience ownership. Because if we're really going to gain anything, if we're ever going to acquire, it's going to be because we own something in our life. So what does that mean for spiritual things? In spiritual matters, we have comment, but no connection. We have people with strong opinions, but they've never bought in. They've never bought in. They've never bought in. They take no ownership in the matter. They have agreement, but they have no assignment. They have vision, but they have no vessel. You see, before the Industrial Revolution, businesses stayed small because there were no vessels to carry the product beyond their little brick and mortar. And see, I'm learning that the enemy doesn't mind us dreaming as long as we never own a vessel to carry the dream in. Listen to me today. The church is a vessel. The church is the vessel that takes the dream that God puts in your heart out and beyond our four walls. But if we never take ownership, if we only rent it occasionally, if we only use the church when we are in crisis, then guess what? We stay small. Not just as a church, I'm talking about as a people, as individuals, we stay small when we don't allow the dream, the calling to move us beyond. We see the enemy's plan in 1 Samuel 13. I'm not going to be long. I'm working faster than you think. 1 Samuel 13. I'm going to work this story for just a moment today because it shows us how the enemy works. Because the enemy said, if I can remove those who know how to take responsibility, if I can remove those that know how to craft and how to shape and how to dream, then my plan wins. So in 1 Samuel chapter 13, beginning at verse 19, if you want to turn there or follow with me where you are, the Bible said there were no blacksmiths in the land of Israel in those days. There were no blacksmiths. How many know what a blacksmith is? See hands, various ages. There were no blacksmiths in the land in those days. What does a blacksmith do? A blacksmith takes a piece of iron, various shapes and sizes, and they create objects by forging the metal using tools, various tools, to hammer, to bend, to cut. They work, and they work. Here's what's fascinating by that. Because while a blacksmith may form a horseshoe out of this piece of iron, while they may bend it, heat it, take it through the processes of getting it down to the right shape, to fashion a horseshoe that will provide traction to the beast that they need to ride on. More importantly, the blacksmiths in Bible days forged weapons. Weaponry that would be used to defend themselves. They took these pieces of iron, these pieces of metal, and they made spears, and they made knives, and they pounded and beat them until they could hold them as shields to guard against the arrows and the spears that were flying through the field from their enemy. You see, in a vast nation such as Israel, this blacksmithing should be a common trade. Yet the Bible says there were no blacksmiths in the land of Israel. Not one blacksmith. What in the world? This is God's people. These are God's people. This is God's promised land. Why are there no blacksmiths? Why is no one forging the weapon? Why is no one making sword or spear? Why is no one preparing for the eventuality? Why is no one ready for the attack of the enemy? I'm going to tell you why, and it's fascinating. I'm going to tell you how sly the enemy is. The Bible said the Philistines, that was their enemy. The Philistines wouldn't allow them. They would not allow blacksmiths. Why? For fear they would make swords and spears for the Hebrews. The enemy said, we're not going to allow there to be any blacksmiths in all of Israel. We don't want there to be any blacksmiths, because if we allow blacksmiths, they're going to make sword, they're going to make spear, and ultimately when we come in with our plan of attack, then if there are no blacksmiths, that means there are no weapons. I'm preaching today, bring back the blacksmiths. Bring back people that know how to make weapons, people that know how to prepare for spiritual battle, people that know how to get ready for what it is the enemy is up to. Because this drives me wild. This drives me crazy. Israel is the blessed nation of God. Those Hebrew people, those Israelite people, they have been through so much. They have paid every price to be delivered, from plagues to Red Seas. They have been through it all. And here they are. The enemy has decided. Let me know when you get that. The enemy has decided that none of them can make weapons. My question is, why is no one rising up? Where is the protest? Where is the passion? Where is the urgency among them? Why is no one realizing what is happening before their very eyes? Just something for you to think about. Where are the blacksmiths? Oh, I'm sure the enemy made it sound logical. I'm sure he made it sound reasonable. But hear me. The enemy is always up to something. And the something that he is up to is no good. The plan that he has is no good. I don't know if you're really convinced of that, because some are enjoying their sin, and some are in a season of sin, and you think it's so wonderful and it feels so good, and nothing bad's happened to me out here. I think this is all right. The enemy has lulled you to sleep. That's why the book of Jude told us, sin when it is finished. First, lust is conceived, but that lust turns into sin, and sin when it, not when you're finished with sin, not when you decide to give it up. Let me know the person that took the hit of heroin the first time, the meth the first time, and said, I'll just quit this whenever I get ready. No, their teeth are falling out of their head, and they're saying, I can't stop. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I'm shaking, because sin isn't finished until it decides that it's finished. It's Family Sunday. I'm just going to be sweet today and do my best Joel Osteen in this house and smile real big, but I'm wondering where the blacksmiths are. Where are people that know how to forge weapons? People who are prepared to go into battle. I don't know if you know this, but the Bible said not to even give place to the devil. That means there is zero trust. There's no, well, you know, he's being a good little devil today, so I'm going to hear what he has to say. Don't even give place to the devil. Oh, Pastor Darrell, you're preaching that old holiness message. You're preaching that old time word. That's what all the old people like to hear. It's because they've been down some roads, son. They've been down some roads, daughter. They've made some of the same mistakes that you're clamoring and wanting to make. And they already know the heartbreak. They already know the shipwreck. They already know the pain. They already know how rough those waters are. And somebody's just trying to warn you, don't go down that road, because it will not bless or build your life. The enemy is up to something. The enemy is at work. And the whole truth is that we need someone making weapons at all times. We need a blacksmith. We need somebody prepared. We need somebody ready to fight at all times. Someone in your family has to be a worshiper. Someone in your family has to be an intercessor. Someone in the family has to be ready to fight at all times. Why? Because Peter told us, you got to be sober. You've got to be vigilant. Why? Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. But listen to me today. The devil ain't dumb. The devil's not dumb. He snuck up on too many. He knows that if he lets up, one inch, that somebody in your family will make a weapon that runs his narrow butt off. Can I say it? He knows. So that's why he keeps the pressure on. That's why you feel like you can't ever get out from under it. Man, 2020 was too much. 2021 hasn't been much better. The question is, are there any blacksmiths in this church? Are there any people in this room that know how to make a sword? Are there any young people? Are there any old people? Are there any musicians? Are there any worshipers? Is there anybody in this room that knows how to fashion a knife? Knows how to fashion a shield? Knows how to make a sword? Are there any blacksmiths in this house that are not just sitting back with their arms crossed and their phone out playing Candy Crush while I'm preaching? Is there anybody that knows how to go to war for your family? So here's what the Bible said, because I believe this is the state of the church, the capital C church, the church in America, the church in the world. This is the state of the church today. Verse 20, so whenever the Israelites needed to sharpen their plowshares, don't miss this. Leave it up for just a moment. The Israelites are God's people. People that have been delivered from plague and Red Sea and every problem. So whenever the Israelites needed to sharpen their plowshares, picks, axes, or sickles, they had to take them to a Philistine blacksmith. My sword's a little dull. My axe is a little dull. So I've got to go to the enemy. And get permission. See, that's what, I'm not being political. Let me just be an American for a moment. That's what frustrates a lot of people in America this week about what's happening in Afghanistan. Because that's the enemy that we defeated 20 years ago. And now 20 years later, we're having to ask permission for them to let our people come through and get on airplanes. And before you say, well, yeah, that's Mr. Biden, it's every president going back to George W. Bush. It's all of them. All of them have fumbled this ball. All of them have made this mistake. All of them have messed around. And now here we are, and everybody is so frustrated. Can you imagine going to your enemy and saying, please, Mr. Enemy, could you sharpen my axe? Please, Mr. Enemy, would you allow me to have my own opinion? Please, Mr. Enemy, can I do this so that I can feed my family, so that I can build my barn? No, that has sabotage written all over. There is no trust for the enemy. Do you think he's going to sharpen my axe as sharp as I want it to be? Why am I going to the enemy for permission? No way, no how. It's not going to happen, because I will never, ever, ever, hear me, every student, hear me, every middle-aged man and woman, you will never find peace in the world's systems. The only way you're going to find the wisdom that your life craves is in the presence of God, in the Word of God. You're not going to get it from your doctor. You're not going to get it from your lawyer. You got to become a blacksmith and start forging the weapons that you need in your life. Why? Because this world is not my home. I'm just passing through. This is not end game for me. So I want to take it to Jesus. But the state of the church is that we are praying. The enemy would give us a break instead of praying for a breakthrough in our lives. Y'all better hear me, because I just rang somebody's bell in this room. You wake up every day saying, please, Mr. Devil, will you just let the pressure off of me for a little while? Please, Mr. Devil, can I just have a moment of peace? Instead of praying, God, what I do with my hammer? Where is that scrap piece of iron I tossed out in the backyard a few years ago? What if I would pray, God, give me the strength to sling the hammer one more time? God, give me the strength to pray in the Spirit one more time. God, give me the passion to worship you with my whole heart one more time. Instead of going to the devil and asking him for a break, somebody bring back the blacksmiths. Verse 21. Am I making sense today, PK? Verse 21, that said the charges were as followed. It's what they had to pay. A quarter of an ounce of silver for sharpening a plowshare or a pick. An eighth of an ounce for sharpening an axe or making the point of an ox goad. You mean, not only do I have to go to the enemy to get the ideas and the wisdom and the counsel and the sharpening that my life needs, but you mean I got to pay the enemy for it too? I got to pay the toll also? Proverbs 13 and 22 says, the wealth of the wicked is laid up for the righteous. This is supposed to be flipped the other way around. It's not supposed to be the church, the saint going to the world. It's supposed to be the world coming to the church. But see, this is 2021, where the world has become more churchy and the church has become more worldly. We need some blacksmiths. We need some hammers. We need some people that know how to build and how to make a difference. I'm here today to preach to a father. I'm here on Family Sunday to preach to a mother. Maybe a student today. I'll take a church kid that can understand half of what I'm saying. Somebody in this house that will take your home and your family back for God. Not seeing how close I can live to the world. Not seeing how much I can get away with. But somebody to get passionate about the things of the Spirit. So verse 22. And I'm closing. Verse 22 said that on the day of the battle, none, not zero. None of the people of Israel had a sword or a spear, except for Saul and Jonathan. Because that was the enemy's plan all along. Get rid of all the blacksmiths. If I get rid of people that know how to take responsibility, people that know how to build, people that know how to forge the weaponry, then ultimately I'll get rid of all the weapons. People will atrophy in their muscles, their spiritual muscles. They won't be passing things down from generation to generation. Ah, son, I'd tell you how to work this old sword, but it's so old I hadn't been able to get it worked on in so long. It's so old now. It was my great, great, great grandfather's, and now, you know, we got it hanging in a curio cabinet now, because it's just a museum of a move long, long ago. Now all we have are our stories about the powerful things God did. But no one is talking about what God is doing. I got stories. I've seen it. But what I'd rather tell about is what God did last Sunday, what God is going to do today, the miracle, the healing, the breakthrough. But we got to have blacksmiths. So the enemy takes away the blacksmith. Ultimately, gets rid of all the weapons. And then, it's time for battle. We got you on the ropes, Israel. What you gonna do now? They went out to battle. But none of the people of Israel had a sword or a spear. All of this because there were no blacksmiths. Hear me. It is God's will and plan for Israel to be victorious, to win. But they only have two swords. And the enemy is so big. You know what the Church Covington needs? Let's talk about you and I for a moment. You know what your family needs? Whisper your address to the heavenlies. You know what needs to happen in your house? We need some blacksmiths. We need people who know how to war in the spirit. But we also need people who know how to take up responsibility. We need students who are called to forge weapons. But Pastor Darrell, I don't know how to do that. I've never done that before. It's okay. It's all right. You can be a late bloomer for breakthrough in your home. You can learn in your old age how to travail until there's change in your family tree. Oh, they're all grown. They're all gone. All they need is a blacksmith. Bring back the blacksmiths. I've been praying for the call of God to fall in this house. I want it to come strong. Yeah. It could cause someone who's uncommitted to shrink back. And I hope you won't. But the truth is, I can't wait any longer. People who know better. Can't. That doesn't mean I'm going to be unkind. I saw someone recently I haven't seen in a year and a half. I said hello. They didn't say hi back. They just started. I want to use the word berating me, but that is strong. But just telling me what for about this church. You know what's, Lord have mercy. Let me just move on. I'll listen to a lot, but hear me. If you're not a blacksmith, if you're not a giver, if you're not faithful, please don't come telling me off. I don't have time for it. Is that kind enough, Lydia? I mean, that rapper, Toby Nwigwe, recently wrote a little song, Try Jesus, Don't Try Me. Because I throw hands. Is that you back there, Andretta? Try Jesus, don't try me. Lord, have mercy. I'm praying the call of God into this house. I'm praying our church youth has the fire fall on them. Not just one or two. Not just my kids or Pastor Brian's kids. Everyone. Students of single parents. Students of broken homes. Students who you come by yourselves. No family here to support her. I want the fire to fall. I want the fire to fall on every student who is suffering with anxiety. Every student that has battled suicide. I call you today. And God calls you today. The truth is, I can call you to commitment. Only God can call you to consecration. I can call you to serve, but only God can call you to sacrifice. I want it to begin in our church kids. They have a blast up there. They play games up there. But I don't want them just to learn how to throw the ball, play the game, or shape the craft. I want the Holy Ghost to fall in our church kids. Because it breaks my heart. Kristen, we went to dinner the other night. I don't know, kids worked somewhere and it was time to eat. We weren't necessarily trying to have a date night or talk about it. We just talking, and she started naming one student after another. Where are they? Where's this one? Where's that one? Before it was over, I didn't even want to finish my meal. I mean, I did, but I didn't want to finish my meal. Because you could almost get depressed. Where are they? Oh, I know what happened. We waited too late to get serious about spiritual things. That's what happened. We assumed that because mama loves God, that they would just follow in our footsteps. And we took no precautions. We didn't teach them how to hold the hammer. We didn't show them that this old piece of iron could actually become a weapon that could save their life. We just need some blacksmiths in this house. That's all we need. I've preached too long. I'm done today, but if that's what you want for your youth, mom and dad, then I'm calling you to lead the way. To answer the call yourselves. We have incredible youth in this house. Powerful young men and young women. One of our youth led one of our songs today. Happened to be my daughter, but she was anointed.
Amen.
I felt Jesus while she sang. I heard Ava singing it two Sundays ago. I heard Cruz and Jude and Cohen. Jaden's getting baptized in just a few minutes. I see Peyton serve and I see things happening for our youth. Hear me. Don't just rent this church. Own it.
Come on now. Yes.
Own it.
Jesus.
Because we need blacksmiths. We need new singers. No offense. We need new musicians. need new ushers. We need new greeters. We need new teachers. We need new preachers. We need a missionary to send to a far land. We need blacksmiths. We need new givers. We need new worshipers. We need new intercessors. Bring back the blacksmiths. Somebody that knows how to forge a weapon. Somebody that knows how to build something that will last. Bring back the blacksmith. Father, I've preached your word today without fear and without faith. I know what you've put stirring in my spirit. I know what you've set ablaze in my heart. I don't know where the 14-year-old is right now, Jesus. I don't know where the 15-year-old is right now. I don't know where the 18-year-old is right now, the 16-year-old, 12-year-old. I felt your call on my life, Lord, when I was 7 years old, 8 years old, playing church, but something down inside of me said, this is what you're doing the rest of your life. I don't know what young blacksmith is in this room right now, but with everything I have, I'll leverage everything I own to put a hammer in their hand to make sure their life is dripping with the anointing of God. Call of God, may it arrest us. It's not just the young, sir. 54 years old, 34 years old. It's not just the young, it's you. It's you. It's you. Bring back the blacksmiths. I surrender all to you. Everything I give to you. I don't know where you're sitting, but if you feel the call of God on your life, if you feel a fire burning inside of you, not going to be everybody, and that's all right. But if it's you all by yourself, come to this altar. Come to this altar. Come. Don't be afraid. Don't wait on a friend. Don't just come. Just answer the call.
Withholding nothing. Yeah.